is because of a military camp.
Al-Kindi, he was a philosopher who lived during the time of Imam Hasan al-Askari. When he gets there, he finds Imam moving towards a community who are anticipating him.
This is Dialogue, an introduction on the most important dialogues and conversations of Imam Hasan al-Askari alayhi salam. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. The program is Dialogue and I'm your host Mahdi. Today we want to talk about one of the great personalities in the early history of the Muslims, Imam Hasan al-Askari alayhi salam. Please stay tuned. Imam Hasan ibn Ali al-Askari alayhi salam, the father of the 12th divinely appointed Imam, Imam al-Mahdi, was the 11th Imam of the infallible Imams from the Ahlul Bayt of the Messenger of Allah sallallahu alayhi wa alayhi. The blessed and pious Imam carried the banner of Islam, undertook the goals of the religion, and sacrificed his life unto this way. He was indeed a fountainhead of knowledge and wisdom. He faced many incredible difficulties and tragedies and hardships in order to spread and promote and keep intact the high values and goals of the religion of Islam. Truly, there are so many countless favors that have been bestowed upon the Muslims by the divinely appointed Imams, the infallible and immaculate Imams, including Imam Hasan al-Askari alayhi salam. Welcome back. It's an honor and a blessing to have you with us. You're listening to Dialogue on IRIB English Radio. So we are humbly talking about the dialogues and the conversations of Imam Hasan ibn Ali al-Askari alayhi salam, the 11th divinely appointed Imam. Peace and blessings upon him. So there's this conversation that Imam Askari alayhi salam, he has with his companion by the name of Abul Hasan Ali ibn al-Husayn al-Qummi, Sheikh al-Qummi, and of course a very distinguished individual, a very prominent Shia from amongst the great Shia scholars in the history of Shia scholasticism. So we find that in the conversation, Imam al-Askari alayhi salam gives this great religious scholar some recommendations that are very, very relevant to every single one of us in the present day. So Imam al-Askari alayhi salam, he says that, "I recommend you to pardon others, to suppress your anger, to continuously associate with your kin, and to comfort your brothers, and to carry out their needs at difficulty and at ease." I think we should pause because there's already a lot of things that Imam al-Askari alayhi salam has brought up that, you know, we need to talk about, and we probably won't be able to even cover all of them. Of course, pardoning others was one thing that we have already spoken about in a previous episode, but how important that is, especially when we don't want to pardon somebody else because of whatever, you know, selfish type inclinations or desires or arrogance. But we should pardon others, especially those who deserve our pardon. But this idea of suppressing anger, right? Anger, of course, in and of itself is not necessarily a bad thing, in the sense where if one is angry for the cause of Allah, if one is angry for the sake of Allah, then this is a good kind of anger. Now, of course, when we're talking about anger, We're not talking about unrestrained, uncontrolled, illogical, irrational anger, you know, because that kind of anger, irrational and illogical and unrestrained anger, leads to sins and vices. We are talking about a very controlled and measured emotion which helps you to rise to the challenge, to defend the sanctities of Islam, to have courage. So perhaps it's not necessarily anger in the sense where we normally think about it. But here, when Imam Askari alayhi salam is talking about suppressing anger, he's talking about this negative kind of anger, this anger which leads to sins, which Imam Ali alayhi salam says is a form of insanity, rage and this kind of wrath and anger. Now, we have to try our best to control this, especially around the people that we love that are close to us, you know, our spouses, our children, our parents, you know, our friends. Sometimes an individual is frustrated. They are, you know, under pressure. They have stress. They have anxiety. But these should not be reasons for us to let out our anger on people who don't deserve it, you know, people that are innocent in reality. And yes, of course, you know, we should keep our anger there to use it against the people and the forces and the entities that are fighting Islam and are trying to destroy Islam. This is Dialogue, Imam Al-Askari alayhi salam.
IRIB English Radio. Please follow our radio programs and podcasts on iranradio.ir.
Now we invite you to listen to Sheikh Ja'far Ja'far.
What I want to do today is I want to look at one particular tradition in which the Imam alayhi salam discusses qualities that he expects in the Shia. He says, فَإِنَّ الرَّجُلَ مِنْكُمْ. He says that indeed if there is a person from amongst you, إِذَا وَرِعَ فِي دِينِ, who is pious in their religion, وَصَدَقَ فِي حَدِيثِهِ, and is truthful in their speech, وَأَدَّ الْأَمَانَةِ, and they fulfill the trust, وَحَسُنَ خُلُقُ, and his akhlaq is good, وَقِيلَ هَذَا شِيْعِيٌ, and if people look at that person who does all of these things and they say, this is a Shia, the Imam says, فَيَسُرُّنِي ذَلِكَ. He said, that would make me happy, the Imam says. Yeah? In the previous hadith, the Imam says, don't claim to be a Shia. But in this hadith, the Imam says, do these things, and it will be proud of me to call you my Shia. Right? And this is what we are striving towards. We really are. Not false labels, but true labels. That when the Imam sees me, the Imam will look at me and says, that is my Shia. These are the points that I want to end with. I think a PowerPoint slide will come up right now to summarize the key points. Yeah? Because I don't want you to forget these points. So take out your phones. I know people tell me don't do that. Don't force people to take notes. But take out your phones. Yeah, a lot of hard work went into this. And these are the 10 points because they are doable. They are so doable for each and every one of us. Think about God more frequently. Avoid sins. Work hard for Allah because God is worth it. Be honest and truthful. Be trustworthy. Be sincere. Be good to one's neighbor. Look after your family. Attend funerals and visit the sick. Inshallah, if we can do these 10 things, my brothers and sisters, then on the Day of Judgment, we can be called the Shia of our Imams, alayhim wassalam.
Thank you very much for listening to this episode of the program, Dialogue. For more information, visit our website at iranradio.ir. Until another episode, God bless you and fi amanillah.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Round the world with reporters.
Almost a year and a half of the genocide, the health of many Gaza's chronically ill patients is deteriorating as Israel continues its blockade of aid and medical supplies. For kidney patients, the situation is hellish as they barely go under dialysis amid the fuel lag that drains their machines. At Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital in Deir el-Balah, there are 206 patients who undergo dialysis every other day. As the hospital generators are running out of fuel, this may take a very heavy toll on their health, especially children. Most of the patients suffer complex complications and need proper medications. However, Gaza is devoid of every means of life. A ceasefire and a flow of aid into Gaza may be the only way to save their lives.
I came here to the south as a displaced woman. I wasn't a kidney patient at all. Because of the environment I lived in, the food I had to eat, the diseases I contracted, and the horror I experienced, I became a kidney patient. I have been undergoing dialysis for weeks. I had the same problems in Rafah. There is no life here at all.
We need many things. Our financial ability is so limited. Even when coming here to the hospital, I need to ask people for money to pay for the transportation. For more than a year, I haven't received any help. My life is getting worse day by day.
Kidney patients depend on canned food full of preservatives, which is destructive to their health. For the past 14 months, they have been trapped in unhealthy environments inside flimsy tents. Many are waiting for the crossings to reopen for an urgent medical evacuation as their needs cannot be met in Gaza.
Kidney patients in Gaza have always suffered because Israel has been deliberately targeting Gaza's hospitals and blocking aid from getting into the besieged territory. But amid the news of an imminent ceasefire, their hope grows daily for a big relief they have been always craving. Abu Bakr Abid, Deir el-Balah, Gaza.
Fires raging, causing devastation that has ruined hundreds of homes and killed at least 24 people, sparking a serious political dispute in the United States.
People impacted by these fires are going to receive one-time payment of $770.
President Biden has faced severe backlash following these remarks during a White House meeting with federal officials. Vice President Kamala Harris, who attended the meeting, had her own comments.
So it's critically important that to the extent you can find anything that gives you an ability to be patient in this extremely dangerous and unprecedented crisis.
She faced harsh criticism and her statements were described as illogical and lacking clarity. President-elect Donald Trump criticized California's Democratic governor, attributing the situation to the governor's failure to sign the Water Restoration Declaration. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson went even further, suggesting that victims should be held accountable.
Obviously, there's been water resource mismanagement, forest management mistakes, all sorts of problems. And it does come down to leadership, and it appears to us that state and local leaders were derelict in their duty in many respects. So that's something that has to be factored in. I think there should probably be conditions on that date.
With the wildfire still raging across Los Angeles, both Democrats and Republicans are pointing fingers at each other. Clearly, a political firestorm has erupted, causing many to wonder who will be left standing once the smoke clears.
An eye-opening episode of the investigative journalism show Report, aired Sunday night by Italy's state broadcaster Rai TV, exposed the high level of lobbying activity by Israeli groups inside the European institutions over the past two decades. The show revealed how more than 20 Israeli lobbying entities, including the Transatlantic Institute, the Brussels-based EU Office of the American Jewish Committee, have been increasingly active in luring more than 200 EU high-ranking figures and lawmakers to unconditionally support Israel in exchange for luxurious trips to Tel Aviv and Jerusalem and other in-kind benefits. The support ranges from promoting Israel-EU trade agreements in all sectors, including military technologies, to overlooking the regime's crimes in the occupied Palestinian territories and other West Asia regions.
It was an excellent TV show which has exposed what some of us already knew, the high level of corruption, blackmail and manipulation resulting from the lobbying activity of more than 20 Israeli groups operating inside the EU institutions. If Israel is accused of genocide in Gaza, the Zionist lobby groups will persuade EU decision makers that this is not true.
The TV show focused on the 33 Italian EU lawmakers who are members of the Transatlantic Friends of Israel lobbying group, viz. As Italy is increasingly falling into political and cultural subordination to Israel.
And Italy Zionist groups constantly try to sway Italian public opinion by victimizing Israel and injecting the accusation of anti-Semitism against anyone who challenges the Israeli narrative.
It must be said that Italy's mainstream media system is closely linked to our lawmakers and political parties. As most of our newspapers depend on public subsidies, it goes without saying that not one of them would ever dare criticize Israel.
The Report TV show denounced that Italy's current foreign minister Antonio Tajani is also a member of the Transatlantic Friends of Israel. Tajani, as EU Commissioner for Industry between 2010 and 2014, encouraged Israel to take part in several EU programs. Under his coordination, trade volume between Brussels and Tel Aviv soared. Tajani has never once condemned Israel for murdering tens of thousands of innocent civilians in Gaza and in the West Bank. Max Civili, Rome.
From the heart of Sydney, thousands march chanting for a ceasefire and justice for Palestinians. Among them are families, students, the elderly and people with disabilities, all standing together to demand an end to the violence and the delivery of aid to Gaza's devastated population. Many say the graphic realities broadcasted from Gaza have galvanized them into action.
This community of people are also my family. I'm here to be with them and feel like I am doing something. On the Day of Judgment, God's going to ask me, what did you do to stop this genocide? I came here every Sunday and I protested. I raised my voice and I spoke and I pulled my heart out.
Brown lives don't matter. Palestinian lives don't matter. This is just again what happened in Vietnam, what happened in other areas of the world, where it happened with the Bosnian genocide. They do not care about brown people. If this was happening to white people, there would be outrage. The Australian government is racist. The Australian government is racist.
Protesters are urging the Australian government to take a firm stance, facilitating aid to Gaza, supporting an international ceasefire and endorsing the growing global movement for boycott, divestment and sanctions against Israel to hold it accountable for war crimes. They believe the atrocities witnessed globally will shape public consciousness for generations.
actually very concerned about how my generation will be represented in the history books. We are watching a genocide unfold live streamed 100% all day, every day, 24/7, and we can't do anything about it. We're also watching blatant hypocrisy and double standards of our politicians, of those who are leading our countries, against our will, against what the people are saying.
These demonstrations, growing in strength every week, reflect deep solidarity across diverse communities in Sydney. Protesters stress that the live-streamed horrors from Gaza are not just a moment in history, but a defining event that will influence the values and actions of future generations, compelling the world to act for justice, peace and human rights.
Palestine will live forever!
Israel's action in Gaza set a troubling global precedent. Sydney demonstrators demand accountability, justice and an end to the conflict, stressing the need to uphold international law in order to break the cycles of violence. Shahanabad, Sydney.
In a powerful display of unity, Pakistanis gathered in Karachi to express solidarity with Palestinians in Gaza and the people of Lebanon. The ongoing Israeli airstrikes have left tens of thousands dead, prompting widespread condemnation. Protesters held banners, chanted slogans, and called for immediate action to stop the bloodshed.
The demonstrators demand urgent global intervention to address the humanitarian crisis in Gaza and Lebanon, and action to stop the U.S.-backed Israeli aggression against the region.
Participants expressed frustration over the inaction of the international community and the silence of the Muslim world. They emphasized the need for a united front to counter Israel's aggression and provide relief to the victims.
The international authorities hailed this flag of so-called humanity, have made it a mere Muslim cause. They're nothing but blind and dead bodies. They're nothing but a shame in the name of humanity. We are here, we are doing what we can do to the best of our abilities. When will you wake up?
The Palestinians, what they are facing right now, it's just like that. It's very something that a humanity shouldn't face. And I am here representing the youth, and I would request all of the youth from all over the world to please stand up for Palestinians.
Protesters also urged the Pakistani government to take a leading role in addressing the crisis. They called for stronger representation at international forums and immediate humanitarian aid to the besieged region.
The Palestinian people, that are Muslim brothers and sisters, are being brutally martyred by the Israeli forces, and the Western media is silent over that cause. So we are over here to support them, to show that we stand with them, to show our solidarity with them.
The march in Karachi reflects the deep connection Pakistani feel with the people of Gaza and Lebanon. Jamaat-e-Islami, which organized the rally, vowed to continue its effort until justice prevails and peace is restored in the region. Muhammad Turi, Karachi.
Standing in triumph for the oppressed people of Palestine and the Mujahideen, this was how the Yemeni Armed Forces spokesperson began his latest televised statement, capturing global attention as he details Yemen's recent military operation.
The missile and UAV forces of the Yemeni Armed Forces, with the help of Allah, conducted a precise joint operation over the past 24 hours. Their target was the American aircraft carrier USS Harry Truman and several of its accompanying warships in the Northern Red Sea. Using cruise missiles and drones, the operation achieved all its objectives.
For 9 intense hours, Yemeni naval forces engaged in relentless battle against the American fleet. As the confrontation unfolded, the U.S. carrier Truman and its escorts faced sustained pressure, forcing them to withdraw. By the 9th hour, the Truman Show came to an end. Ordinary Yemenis praised these latest military achievements.
We will continue to fight until the last drop of blood. I will never accept that our brothers in Palestine continue suffering. Little Yemeni kids and elderly Yemenis will never accept this. If there was a way for me to go to Palestine for jihad against the Zionists, by Allah, I would have already been there.
We say to the aggressors the same thing our Imam Hussein said to his enemies when offered the choice between death and disgrace. Never shall we succumb to disgrace.
The latest round of battle at sea marks the fifth encounter between Yemen's armed forces and the USS Truman, according to the Yemeni spokesperson. Each time the Yemeni military has compelled the carrier to retreat, disrupting its plans to conduct airstrikes on Yemen. The majority of Yemenis believe their army is upholding international law, particularly the responsibility to protect doctrine, which requires all nations to take decisive action in order to stop or halt genocide. Yusuf Mawdi, Sana'a.
As the genocide against the people of Palestine continues, several groups and individuals have taken direct action against the Israeli war machine in the UK. In August last year, for example, dozens of activists from Palestine Action stormed the Bristol-based plant belonging to Elbit Systems, the largest weapons manufacturer in Israel, causing an estimated £1 million worth of damage and reportedly resulting in major disruption to some of the most sensitive elements of the factory for months to come. Currently, 18 people are being held in relation to the factory raid, many of them under draconian UK anti-terrorism laws, sparking condemnation from human rights groups and observers across the world.
Pro-Palestinian activists have gathered here in the British capital, London, to discuss the abusive conditions the prisoners are being held under, with Muslim captives in particular being singled out for discriminatory treatment by prison authorities.
Fatima Zainab is one of the Muslim captives still being held in prison while awaiting her court appearance. Her religious rights have been consistently violated over the past 5 months, including repeated violations of her right to privacy, with male officers entering her cell before she's had an opportunity to wear her hijab.
Could be a kind of a psychological oppression in a sense. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, they try, when they incarcerate you, they try to bother you as much as possible. And, you know, one of the things that would bother Muslims would be something like that, especially a Muslim woman, you know. Violating her right to privacy is offensive. They know these things very well.
Campaigners argue that the British government's use of anti-terrorism legislation is not only intended to punish those disrupting the Israeli war machine, but also to discourage others from taking action against Israeli companies like Elbit Systems and others drenched in Palestinian and Lebanese blood.
Now, of course, that's an attempt to intimidate them and indeed to act as a demonstration to everyone else who might think about sabotaging Elbit's death factories and stop them sending drones to kill children in Palestine. Will it work? Well, no, it's not going to work because Elbit continues to be targeted. Palestine Action continues to target people, and people are so furious in this country that they're, of course, going to carry on with Palestine solidarity activity, including specifically material action to stop the death factories.
Britain's culpability in the historic and ongoing crimes of the Zionist regime mean that many among the UK public feel duty-bound to continue disrupting and struggling against the Zionist killing machine's tentacles in Britain and beyond, despite the dangers to their own freedom and safety. East Academy, London.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست.
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي ارسل رسوله بالهدى ودين.
It is
is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد، موسیقی خاصی دارد، روش خاصی دارد، اینها چیزایی لازم است.
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones.
اما این کافی نیست.
But it's not enough.
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن. دوری از قرآن. از قرآن.
Muslims' major problem is losing touch with the Quran. 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 کتاب الله.
In the limelight.
A new study has found significant distortions in Western media coverage of the Gaza war, with right-wing news channels and right-wing British publications making effort to portray pro-Palestinian protesters as anti-Semitic. We take a look at some of the world press and media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The new Arab website has covered this story and tells us more. Britain's pro-Palestinian groups have condemned London's Metropolitan Police for preventing a pro-Palestine rally outside the BBC headquarters from going ahead as scheduled on 18th of January. Six pro-Palestinian groups organising the National Palestine Marches and supported by at least 150 high-profile individuals and organisations, including Liberty, Amnesty International UK and Greenpeace, took the Metropolitan Police to task. In a joint statement issued on Friday 10th of January, they said the agency is misusing public order powers to shield the BBC from public scrutiny over fake news published about the ongoing Israeli genocide war in the Gaza Strip. According to the protest organisers, the BBC's coverage of Gaza has failed to portray Palestinian suffering adequately. They also view the marches as an important opportunity to hold the BBC, the British Broadcasting Corporation, to account for their pro-Israeli bias. The statement added, "The route for the march was confirmed with the police nearly 2 months ago, and as agreed with them, was publicly announced on 30th of November. With just over a week to go, the Metropolitan Police is reneging on the agreement and has stated its intention to prevent the protests from going ahead as planned." The statement added, "The BBC is a major institution. It is a publicly funded state broadcaster and it is rightly accountable to the public. The police should not be misusing public order powers to shield the BBC from democratic scrutiny." The statement was signed by dozens of British parliamentarians and cultural figures, including actors, academics and trade union activists, Labour, Independent, Green, Plaid Cymru, Sinn Féin and Scottish Nationalist Party lawmakers signed the statement. The statement condemned attempts to link the pro-Palestinian protests to anti-Jewish sentiment as false and dangerous. According to a study finding significant distortions in the Western media coverage of the Gaza war, right-wing news channels and right-wing British publications have been making every effort to portray the pro-Palestinian protesters as anti-Semitic. The study reports pro-Palestinian voices facing misrepresentation and vilification by British media outlets, with allegations of anti-Semitism and terrorism applied to discredit legitimate advocacy efforts. The study has said Muslim opposition to Israel has been framed as anti-Semitic by some publications and commentators. Since October of 2023, the Israeli regime has cut off water, food, medicine and electricity to the Gaza Strip whilst pounding the blockaded Palestinian territory from air, ground and sea. The relentless, brutal Israeli war on Gaza has claimed the lives of nearly 47,000 Palestinians, many of them women and children. The Tehran-based English-language newspaper Kayhan has also covered the same story and tells us more. British parliamentarians and cultural figures on Saturday, 11th of January, have criticised the London Metropolitan Police for blocking a pro-Palestine march from starting outside the BBC headquarters in London. Organisers of the pro-Palestine march said it had agreed on the route with the police months in advance, but organisers now face objections from the police after pro-Zionist groups, MPs and peers reportedly urged the Metropolitan Police Commissioner Mark Rowley to change the route after claims it could disrupt a nearby synagogue. An organiser of the march said that the Metropolitan Police informed them in December that Chief Rabbi Ephraim Mervis had made representations to them. Mervis confirmed in December that he was in talks with the police about the march. Organisers dismissed the claims as baseless, noting that the synagogue is not on the route and that there has not been a single incident of any threat to a synagogue attached to any of the marchers. In an open letter, the pro-Palestine coalition criticised the Metropolitan Police for misusing public order powers to shield the BBC from democratic scrutiny. The open letter described the BBC as a publicly funded state broadcaster that must be held accountable for its reporting on Gaza. The organisers accused the police of undermining democratic freedoms by deciding to block the protests marching from the BBC headquarters in West London. The open letter said, "The rights to protest and free speech are precious. It is not acceptable in a democratic society that, in the face of an ongoing genocide in Gaza, people should be barred from protesting at the BBC headquarters." The open letter was also signed by dozens of British parliamentarians, cultural figures, including actors, academics, trade union activists. Among the signatories of the open letter were Jeremy Corbyn, Diane Abbott, musician Brian Eno, and actors Mark Rylance and Maxine Peake. Trade union leaders like Mick Lynch and Dave Ward also signed the open letter. The open letter highlighted the diversity of the pro-Palestine movement, pointing out that Jewish people have been joining the marches in their thousands. It condemned attempts to link the protest to anti-Jewish sentiment as false and dangerous. Activists argue that the BBC's coverage of the brutal war in Gaza has failed to portray properly the Palestinian suffering and view the march as a critical opportunity to hold the broadcaster accountable. The Middle East Eye has also covered the same story and tells us more. More than 660 prominent British Jews have called on the Metropolitan Police to reverse a ban on a planned pro-Palestine protest outside the BBC headquarters in London later this week. Prominent legal, cultural and academic figures are among hundreds of British Jews calling on the Metropolitan Police to reverse the decision to prevent the pro-Palestine rally outside the BBC on 18th of January. The most prominent members of the Jewish community opposing the police decision include Rabbi Jeffrey Newman, writer and director Adam Gantz, professors Moshe Machover and Jacqueline Rose, and writer and comedian Alexis Sale. In a statement on Monday, 13th of January, the Jewish Voice for Labour also criticised the ban as bowing to partisan campaigning aimed at preventing peaceful and lawful assembly. The group said the Metropolitan Police faced strong pressure from pro-Israel organisations who claimed that Palestine solidarity protests pose a threat to a local synagogue. The statement noted, "This evidence-free claim is robustly contradicted by the large Jewish bloc visible on every major demonstration since the genocide began in October of 2023. The statement added, "As Jews, we are shocked at this brazen attempt to interfere with hard-won political freedoms by conjuring up an imaginary threat to Jewish freedom of worship." Also recently, a Jewish group calling itself Torah Judaism has urged all countries in the world to cut off all ties with Israel, which it said is founded on perverse ideology of Zionism. The group calling itself Torah Judaism wrote on X, "We call on all countries and peoples of the world to cut off all relations with Israel and the Zionists. Do not help them. Do not let them into your country, because if they sense that you have shown the slightest weakness, they will try to crush you, dominate you, and enslave you."
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Tour the pit.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islamite.
Islamite.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحیم. السلام علیکم to all of you dear listeners of IRIB English Radio. Welcome to another episode of Youth Station. Well, this is Nahid and here with me is my dear sister.
Wa alaikum assalam. How are you?
Great. How about you? Are you okay?
Oh my God, I'm so good. Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah.
Oh, tell us about it. Why are you so excited and happy?
Oh, so, you know, lots of stuff we really care about. And one of them for me is my little sister.
Oh, you have a little sister.
I do. Yeah, she's very younger than me. So I'm half mother to her.
Oh.
Yeah, so I really treasure her because she gives me hope of being better and better so that I can make her be better and better. I really treasure being with her.
Oh, the connection is so nice. So you treasure just being with your little sister, right?
Everything with her, I would say.
Oh.
Like, see, having a connection with
your
family member is, it's very important. By the way, what do you treasure?
Well, you know, the most important thing to me, first of all, like not looking at it from the religious point of view, since I do have religious beliefs at the same time, but in the, let's say, casual and the typical lifestyle, what I treasure the most is my profession.
Oh.
Like my job is really important to me because most of the time, like, let's say about 10, 15 hours of the day sometimes.
Oh.
I'm at work. Yeah, I'm the institute. Like, we're having a kind of institute. And that institute is really important to me. And the way it's improving, the way it is working, it's like betterment is really important to me.
Tell me more about your institute. What do you do?
We have a little institute to teach languages. And as the, let's say, so-called manager, what matters to me is the improvement. Like, I really think about it a lot. Even, like, imagine sometimes at night when I'm dreaming of what can we do to make it better. Like, what about the change in the design of that wall there? You see?
It keeps you alive.
Yeah, exactly. And this is really important to me.
That's more than a job to you, yeah, exactly. I see.
You know, I've been just like in this job since, let's say, 10 or more, 10 or 11.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh, you look so young.
Yeah, regarding that.
Yeah, I couldn't see that.
Yeah, I was being the child labor, let's say.
Oh.
No, I started my job when I was like 18.
Oh.
And, yeah.
Basically an adult.
Yeah, so this is really important to me. Like, my job is really important. And now comparing to what you treasure the most, which is your sister, a question arises here. As Muslim young people in the community, which we have many, like, let's say, we have many things around. We have technology. We have enemies even around. Mm-hmm. We have those people who are in the battle with our beliefs. Like, they are even taking all their steps towards changing what we believe in. I don't know why. So what are the things that we treasure the most? And are they all okay? Like, sometimes I ask myself, should I change my all focus from this view to another thing? And are the things that we treasure worth? Are they worthy of the things that we are just, like, taking for granted?
Oh, that's a very interesting thing.
Yeah, this question is really nice to just assess take a look at what we like.
It makes me speechless. I would want to think before it. So, yeah, we have different things we treasure, like, of course, my most valuable thing is that I have faith in Allah. Beside that, I care about my family. I care about my career. I care about me. I really treasure me. I can see my generation is very individualist and they treasure themselves.
And now that's a good point.
Yeah, it is a good thing. But now that you ask, is it worthy? It made me like shock. Is it worthy? Is it? How much time do I spend for it? And, you know, I have heard that we become what we like.
Yes.
That is interesting and very, very scary.
It really happens in your life. It really happens in your life. Have you had the like childhood game of playing the role of the person you are right now?
I don't remember.
Like, when I was a child, I was always teaching people.
Oh.
Yeah, and I found myself teaching a few years later.
I think I used to do that too. As a child, I used to be talkative and I cared about talking. So that's what I'm doing right now.
You see?
Yeah, I'm earning by talking.
So
like
it really
teaching.
Is making the future personality of us.
Yeah, it makes us.
This is IRIB English Radio. You're listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back. You're listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is Youth Station. What do you treasure?
Yeah, and are those things that you treasure worthy? Like, have you ever thought the things that are the most important ones to me can be dangerous, can be, like, risky, and the risk can be losing the other things that are the priority in my life?
In my case, I think when I treasure myself over my family, I think it can be very bad. So, of course, we should value ourselves, but we should also remember that other human beings are human beings, bro.
Yeah.
So I think that can be a conflict between the treasures I have and other people's treasure.
Yeah, I can relate to it. Like, in this hectic lifestyles that we have, many times, unfortunately, I hope for our listeners, it's just like never. But but sometimes we just forget about the fact that you need to spend time with your family. So you need to just invest some time. Let's say not spend, because it's not a spending time.
Oh,
it's investing.
God.
It's just changing it into a time where you are improving and you are enjoying with your true self. Like, you know, how we are different. Like, we act differently in different places during the day. Like, in the morning when I go to school, I'm the in the personality of a teacher.
Definitely.
Who is like avert of everything that she's doing because children are out there looking at her.
Yeah, they're watching.
So then again in the afternoon with the other job, even here, when we are just recording, we are having the personality of the person.
Mm-hmm.
And then at home, now compare it to the moment that you're at home with your family. You're the true self of yourself. And you have no, let's say, guards, no, no negative things. Let's say even no positive or awareness kinds of symptoms. You are just yourself enjoying your time.
So that made me think if maybe we should think deeply about what we treasure, what we should and what we shouldn't. So for me, I think I should, as I mentioned in the very beginning, I really care about my sister. She's the closest to me in the family. And I really treasure her. But maybe we should break it down a little more. What made this a treasure to me? Should it be like that or not? Do you think any other questions I should ask myself regarding treasure?
Yeah, of course. There are many questions. Like, how can I know if the thing that I treasure is the priority or not?
Oh my, yeah. That's so
true. It can even get more difficult.
Yeah.
But it's not that hard. Like, when we just know the needs that we have,
mm-hmm.
like the requirements for the life of a Muslim and a society in which she or he has to improve, has to work, has to be careful of her family,
mm-hmm.
her or his family. So when we know the needs and the requirements, then we can decide them. Like, it will be simpler for us.
I think what we should treasure should be something that aligns with our beliefs and our goal. So if we can have only one big goal that can be an umbrella to our other little goals, for me that goal would be, like any other Muslim, to enter Jannah.
Oh, yeah.
Because that is when I'm sure Allah has accepted me and I am free of sin. So that is the goal. And I think any other thing that helps me go toward this goal should be what I treasure.
So welcome back to Youth Station, where we are talking about the things we treasure. So starting from the view that we, all of us, we do have things that we treasure the most. And then knowing that the destination is like our proximity to Allah.
Mm-hmm.
So now, how can we just recognize the things that we should treasure? And even on the other hand, the things that we sometimes take for granted and we do not treasure.
We ignore it.
Yeah.
We feel like it never was there.
Yeah, and sometimes we don't want to ignore them, but they are just normalized for us.
Yeah, to clarify that point, because I think that's going a little abstract, I would say we ignore some of our treasures and we realize about them after we lose it. For example, like a good friend, or maybe sometimes when you fall sick,
yeah, that's
you realize,
so true.
Oh, I had health. Or for example, when your arm starts aching, then you realize, oh my God, throughout my life, my arm was never aching. I was always healthy.
Yeah, see, that is so true.
Yeah, like, you see the treasures we don't realize at all.
Yeah, even like food, even having the, like when I see the scenes of war,
mm-hmm.
and the effects that it might, unfortunately it has on children, let's say, on families. And the problems that they have, like even turning on the TV, you can see many samples of that.
Yes.
So I feel like, do I really treasure this roof that I have, this food that is available for me, this place that I'm living in? And the way, like, okay, everything is okay for me. Everything is well prepared for me to have my job,
yes.
to go and just work out and try to just have the best things in my workplace. So do I treasure the requirements for that, the food, the roof, the warm family around?
I think I haven't. Now that you mentioned the details, I think I haven't. The food, yes, the food, the drinks. Alhamdulillah, you know, I think that's why Allah keeps reminding us that we should say Alhamdulillah after food, to treasure it.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh my God. So after all these treasures, then we know the worth of it. And I think This by itself can help us improve better and better because we realize what we have.
Yeah, exactly. And that is why I always say, like, when you open Quran, in Quran they have been repeatedly mentioned that look around and see the blessings you've got in your life. Try to recognize the things that Allah has given you. Like, we have too many reminders again and again that are there to tell us. And when we just recite Quran, we realize that, yes, putting some thought into it, I should be like this. But am I really treasuring everything? Sometimes no, right?
Yeah, unfortunately.
When we get too busy, we don't care like about the food, about the family. When we are even too tired, we just have our parents around and we nag. But are we really looking at the things that we need to be aware of? Even the lives of prophets, like, they had many problems. They had many challenges.
Many challenges.
Them. Yeah, and their presence is a blessing to us. Is the thing that we need to treasure.
Their experience
right?
that they left behind for us. Their legacy.
Yeah, and even our own religion. You see, like, when we look around, when we try to jot down the things that we've got, the religion that we have, the prophets, the too many samples. So we have many things that we need to treasure, that regardless of the fact that some of them are really important to us, we just take them for granted, right?
Yes, I think so. The bottom line for me today would be, I think I should reevaluate the treasures. I have many treasures. I have not been treasuring them.
We are not having the priorities over them. Like, we think they have always been there for us.
And they always will be.
Yeah, exactly. So they will be there. Like my parents, like everything.
Yes.
And the moment that we lose them is the moment of regret, let's say.
Yes, ya Allah.
Have you heard the hadith of our great prophet, which was mentioning, I am leaving two treasures for you here.
Oh, yes. Saqalay.
So, yeah, exactly. So the things that he left for us were Quran and
Ahlul Bayt, alayhim as-salam.
So they are also the things that we need to treasure. We are advised to treasure, right?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, those are our biggest treasures. Indeed, we need to pay more attention.
Yeah, exactly. So in today's episode of Youth Station, we talked about the things that we treasure and the things that we sometimes, unfortunately, might forget about or just take for granted. I wish you good times. Until another episode of Youth Station. Wassalamu alaikum.
Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down.
Hamas hailed the ceasefire agreement in Gaza, calling it the result of the resilience of Palestinian people and the resistance fighters for more than 15 months. Iran has congratulated the Palestinian resistance for Gaza ceasefire deal, calling it a great victory. And more Palestinians are killed in fresh Israeli strikes on Gaza despite a ceasefire agreement reached between the regime and the Hamas resistance fighters. Hello and warm welcome to our world news from our Tehran studios with me, Zakaria Zainab. Thank you for joining us. The resilience of Palestinians, their resistance, as well as steadfastness against the Israeli genocidal war in Gaza have come to fruition. That is in form of a ceasefire deal the regime agreed with the Hamas resistance movement, which is being termed as a great victory for the Palestinian nation. Here is a report.
After over 15 months of the Israeli genocide in Gaza, the regime has finally accepted the terms of a ceasefire after a series of talks mediated by Qatar, Egypt, and the US in Doha. The resistance Hamas movement hailed the outcome, attributing it to the resilience of the Palestinian nation and an achievement for the entire Muslim world. The group also called the ceasefire a milestone in Palestinians' struggle for liberation from the occupying regime, while also reaffirming its commitment to stop Israel's aggression and bloodshed. Palestinians and people around the globe, especially in the West Asia region, have praised the resilience of resistance groups in face of Israeli genocide.
I want to say to them, greetings to you for your patience. Greetings to the Palestinian people for their patience. Netanyahu announced in 2023 that there will be no more resistance in 2024. In 2025, he said he was waiting for the response of the resistance and its agreement with ceasefire conditions. We thank God.
We congratulate them for this great victory achieved by Hamas and all resistance groups in Gaza. The three-phase ceasefire deal will take months to be accomplished. In the first stage, lasting 6 weeks, Hamas